Now, we'll have questions answered. Now, but let me ask, if I may, first, what does NORC stand for? You have a leaked slide up there.
It's the National Opinion Research Center.
National
Opinion Research Center.
Could you give us a little piece of how that happened at UChicago and all that?
How?
Where that money came from, how that came about?
How, which money?
And NORC, how that came to be at University of Chicago.
That's a good question. 1941, I believe, NORC moved from being university-oriented with the University of Colorado to University of Chicago, mostly for the types of research that they were doing, which was public interest research. It was the first research group to be doing this type of work in the public's interest. And most of the work that they were doing was tied to what a lot of people at the University of Chicago at the time were doing, and it was sort of a natural fit.
Thank you. Mm-hmm. Other questions? Well, go with Rosalie first.
Okay. You are the first speaker who is really anchoring to TIP, and you have a database that is obviously coming out of ATP, and ATP is different from TIP. So my question is, how are you going to bridge, and this may be a question more for Robert or Stephanie, what's the plan for bridging in evaluation between the two programs? I didn't know whether, it's ATP evaluation and now TIP will have its own evaluation, or whether there's going to be this attempt to kind of, cross the barrier between them and merge data and so on. So, question.
That's a really good question. One I am going to punt to Robert.
Thank you. When we're talking about the data enclave, let's take a look at the context of what was happening 2 years in the process of being phased out and phased down. And we needed to keep a way of maintaining a legacy that many in this room have established. So we were trying to make sure that people got access to our data to get good quality research still being done on something that took 16 years to build. But when we're going forward, and so that was the original context, but when we're going forward in terms of building the bridge, you saw the three or four topics that Tim put up in terms of the proposals that are coming through to the data enclave right now. We're funding them for we've offered up to $25,000 per proposal. And what we're looking at in terms of, look, we acknowledge the fact that this is ATP data. It isn't TIP data. But there are a lot of lessons that could be gleaned, a lot of lessons that could be learned from this data that could be directly applicable to TIP. So it's part of the selection criteria that we have here for what proposals we will fund, or what researchers we will grant access to. They have to be relevant to TIP's mission. They have to help inform us. That's the bridge that we've established right now. But because TIP is a new program that we haven't even funded a single proposal yet, it's our intent, it's my intention to put TIP data into the data enclave. That's my hope. Stephanie?
Sure. I think one of the missions of the Economic Assessment Office that Rosalie quite clearly set forth when she started the office also was that our goal was to more broadly study innovation and entrepreneurship. And so this rich source of data is also incredibly useful for researchers to look at a lot of these issues, look at collaboration, look at spillovers, and really add to that knowledge. We spend most of our time collecting the data and doing a lot of the initial processing. We do some of the descriptive analysis, but we don't really have the staff to fully utilize the data. And so by allowing researchers to have access to these, I hope will inform not only TIP, but will also more inform the whole community. One of my goals as well is with this new Science of Science Policy Initiative, which you're going to be hearing about at the September workshop, as well as the Science of Science Innovation and Policy, the NSF one. Julia Lane, who's been coming in and out, and she'll be back this afternoon, so I will introduce her. Who's heading up the initiative here, a lot of our questions in our surveys form a basis that others can use as a starting point. So while ATP is not a scientific sample, the data and the richness of the data and the findings are very, very useful as a platform for studying as a starting point for the Science of Science Policy Initiative as well.
Just a quick follow-on. The ATP projects that are in place, will those projects continue to be followed as TIP projects come along, or will those be dropped, you know, and only new data collected on the new TIP project?
I think the plans right now are to continue the data collection for the ATP projects through their life cycle. So that's another reason we'll be able to capture that and put those data out at the data enclave as well.
Right. But whether they're followed 2 years, 4 years, and 6 years, you know, we just funded the ones right now, it's up in the air.
We may be following them for the 3 to 5 years. Yeah, but that will still be a lot.
Stephanie, can you describe the data in the enclave?
Quickly hit him. Yeah. You know, please go to the website and look. It's all of the surveys that were funded during projects, so the baselines, the annuals, the closeout, the PPS surveys that have been completed are over there. The suite of applicant surveys in the 3 years are in the data from the Andrew discussed with Survey of ATP Joint Ventures. Everything that's been closed out in terms of ATP data collection is there. Things that are still active, the data is not there yet.
Connie? Go ahead. We can build on that. And I think maybe Cass's question was getting at the overarching that all of the data from our surveys are there, but then what Tim talked about was our metadata and the fact that when researchers come in and they improve the data or they perhaps go in and adjust for non-response or they do calculations or manipulations, our goal is that those researchers will also share that result and help us learn and improve our surveys as well. So it really is the feedback loop in action. And Tim didn't put up my favorite slide that he usually puts out from his presentation, but if you can imagine a shelf that has a bunch of cans with no labels versus a bunch of cans with labels, you can see, you know, that what the metadata is attempting to do is to label all that information that's being processed about these surveys as well.
I wanted to follow up on Rosalie's question, which is, will TIP also provide a survey? Will you survey those awardees like you do with BRS?
And yes, that's for, we have every intent of doing.
Okay, and that survey will expand from the technology that's being developed all the way through to impact, or does it stop at some point?
Again, it's our intent to do that, but because we haven't started yet, because we're still interpreting what's required.
Okay, and then my third question is,
it's our intent. I can answer that.
If you do have that survey, and if it is in place, how do you? And I think back to Rosalie's question: how do you bridge those survey results? Will it just be in a separate place in the enclave, and will you attempt to match if you can match? It's going to be separate then.
Just the way we have the different pieces of the BRS in the data enclave right now, and then we have our survey of applicants, we have our joint venture survey. So we actually have many different components to our data collection. Our hope, and one of the improvements, is that we're hoping some researcher who will come along and intimately get to know our data, that they will work on that integration. Now, down the line, whether they will work on integrating it with TIP as well is unclear. I mean, there's definitely new ways and methods to do that. And Steve actually has undertaken this along with Ted and Westat. They've created a mini database internally that matches about 30 variables. And are we making that available on the data enclave? We are. So actually, some of this integration's already occurred across BRS at the very high level about these 30 variables, which is pretty cool. And we're hoping that researchers will now build on that as well. So
There's clearly going to be different questions asked for TIP.
Right.
But certainly 5 years from now, someone's going to say, did TIP work as well as ATP? So there'll have to be enough there to say, depending on some measures, we see this worked better and this did not work as well.
Even when you get to the commercialization, which TIP may not have the same goal, but a question would be, did a program that had that strong focus deliver more results than one that focused more, you know, on the knowledge side?
Okay, we have a question from way in the back that we'll get to, Jim. Yeah.
Yep. Both the line ones and the
you come to a microphone
yeah,
at the
good.
Table here, if
yeah.
you don't mind? We have this guy.
My name is Brian Davis. I work at Westat. I was just curious, does the Enclave also provide any other interactive capability? Can researchers, for example, do frequencies or cross-tabulations on any other data?
Absolutely.
And can they also download any of that data?
That's a good question. So, yeah, the point is we need to make this environment as sort of personalized and customized as we can. It depends, again, on the producer, right? It depends on the data set and the producer. In one sense, a producer may say, this data set is completely will allow complete access to this as it is. Researchers can go in, have at it, run their regressions, do whatever they need to do in their private area, share with people all they want to share. They can't take anything out of the environment.
Okay, don't
right? So because you're completely locked down, you can't cut and paste, you can't alt-tab, you can't do any of the clever ways to sort of try to get in and out of the environment. They've all been closed off. But you do have all of this in e-copy in your private area, and once you want something disclosure-proofed, you just simply drop it in the disclosure-proof bucket for us to look at. But we do... In training, try to emphasize that to limit the number of disclosure reviews that you do just for your own purpose, so that you know when you do end up moving to the publication stage, that you're able to bring out everything that you want to be able to bring out.
So researchers are required to sign data use agreements?
Yes. Okay. So there's a legal agreement both signed by the institution, the research institution, something with institutional signature authority, the researcher, and all researchers on that proposal. Non-disclosure agreements and MOUs are all signed.
Okay, one more question, quick question from Jim.
In addition to doing the ET.gov program, I'm also involved with the Semantic Interoperability Community of Practice and have a project. I'm the lead on a pilot project within that for the energy community. And within that, I've discovered that there are certain things that are really important. And that leads to the question is, do these persistent variables exist in an XML metadata, you know, such as an ontology?
Simple answer is yes. That's the direction in which everything is going, and that's what we're doing in the environment as well in the Enclave.
Great, great, good.
Okay, thank you.
Yeah, great.
One more comment. For other federal agencies in here, I believe, and correct me if I'm wrong, Tim, other federal agencies have indeed camped onto this data Enclave effort. Okay, and is that correct?
Yes. In fact, we're in discussion with a number of other smaller statistical agencies as well. It's the point I made earlier, that they don't have the resources to be able to provide the platform or the disclosure proofing process or this sort of thing. It's a natural fit for smaller agencies that need this type of assistance.
Mm-hmm. Okay. All right. Great. Good. Well, thank you again. And next up on the agenda is lunch. We will have an hour for lunch. We think of it as the opportunity to network with one another as well.